Jonesy. Yes.
Jonesy, which I thought was funny because it occurred to me that Indiana Jones is named after his dog. So you find that's the last trilogy with Sean Connery when he tells him, you know, Sean Connery as Indiana, as Harrison Ford's dad is just like the dog, you know, the dog's name was Indiana Jones. And then the cat's name is Jones. They say Jones, and then the guy calls it Jonesy, but she says Jones. And so it's just this funny thing of cats and dogs living together, mass hysteria, which is said by Peter Venkman in Ghostbusters, which is funny because I just came across this whole thing. I don't know how, I mean, I thought it before that, okay, the inverted cross, right, is a symbol for St. Peter, because Peter, not in the Bible itself, but in all the Catholic literature has it where he is crucified upside down. And so but long before, it was a symbol of like Antichrist, which is the way we see it now. There's like that devil movie that came out where they have the elevator and you see the upside down cross and whatnot. Well, that was originally like a symbol of humility related to St. Peter. And so I thought it was funny, like looking at the hangman in that regard, that he is St. Peter. And then you have here Peter Venkman saying cats and dogs living together, mass hysteria. And then also that they're talking about revelations. You know, they're describing fire and brimstone, and that's his example of like the end times.
Like, and you know, and you know that isn't it Peter is the rock?
Yes.
And so, Peter is an expression for a penis. So right. Here you have Sigourney Weaver getting fucked by Peter Venkman. So right. Again, it's Sigourney Weaver and the dick.
Exactly. And so you have yeah, exactly. That's the whole thing. And then she liberates her pussy. She takes her pussy with her. And so it's this whole thing. I don't know.
Remember at the beginning of this, you were talking about your silly oracle, Alan?
Yeah.
Okay, so my silly oracle has been Finnegan's Wake for a while now, right? And this is maybe just a 2-minute tangent, but whatever, as far as synchronicity.
Can I let you do that? Can I just throw in before, so when we go off on that, is to say in Ghostbusters 2, notice that Sigourney Weaver has the child that she tries to keep away from Peter. I just want to throw that out to continue with the alien theme of taking her motherhood, taking possession
right,
of her.
Right, and which climbs out on the ledger, right?
Right. So I just want to throw that out there. And please, Bill, go on. I just wanted to throw that little snippet in.
I hope this doesn't derail anything. It's just a minute outtake. But so after you had meant we were talking about the Beach Boys and everything, I had Finnegan's Wake to my left, and I figured I'm just going to open it and just glance to my left and just see what it says, just to see if there's any connection there. And you had said your favorite song on the album Holland was probably the last song on the album, right?
Yes.
Well, it's a song called Funky Pretty. Okay, so as I look down to Finnegan's Wake, this is the sentence that my eye looks at. To funk is only Peter natural, its daring fears divine. So, whatever, just a little detour.
No, that's awesome.
James Joyce blowing my mind constantly with the way his text can somehow grab me into a moment. And like I said, I hope this doesn't derail the conversation, but it just sort of popped off right in front of me. I had to mention it.
So
Peter popped off in front of you?
I guess it did.
No. I'm thinking of In the Meaning of Life when that guy's playing the piano and he has all the different names for Dick. And he was just like, isn't it awfully nice to have a penis? Isn't it awfully, you know, do you know what I'm talking
about? Yeah, of course.
John Thomas.
Yeah, John Thomas, totally. So here I'm looking at Shelley Duvall's Tall Tales and Legends, and her name is Darling Clementine, okay? Which is really funny because I had done this blog a while back about, I called it Meet Me on Talk, and I basically in there just point out that she is olive oil in Popeye, right? And then I was making the connection between olive and this is kind of complicated, but you have Little Miss Sunshine, right? The little girl's name in Miss Sunshine is Olive, okay? So Crowley called himself Little Sunshine in court, right? When they were like saying, your name is the Beast, is that a reference to the book of Revelations, this and that? And he says, it only means Little Sunshine. You can just call me Little Sunshine. And then there's all this thing around that he was referred to as Alice. So like Israel Regarde would refer to him as Alice. And he was like, you know, he was basically being like, you're a little bitch. But anyways, I was looking at Eternal Sunshine and the Spotless Mind, where Kate Winslet is named Clementine, and that Clementine is, you know, this orange. And then the orange is a regular symbol for the sun. So you can see like, Peter Fonda, holding up the orange in The Trip, where he's like, it's like the sun. I hold the sun in my hand. And then obviously A Clockwork Orange, where, you know, the sun's like the big clock in the sky. You know, it's like how we tell everything, you know. Everything is seen in relationship to it. And then she's got like this orange flower on her shirt, Shelley Duvall. And so it's just funny, like Shelley Duvall as like Wendy in The Shining, and then looking at her as Darling Clementine. It was just, I had done this, all these connections with Clementine being the orange and this and that. And then I just came upon this morning, actually, that she was referred to as Darling Clementine. So it was funny.
That's interesting. I have in my book, Look at All the Happy Creatures, the fiction book, there's probably the biggest main character. Her name is Tangerine, and at some point she sort of has this like personality shift. She sort of gets like MK Ultra'd, and she changes her name to Pumpkin. And when we were first thinking Peter, what I was thinking was Peter Pumpkin Eater.
Uh huh.
Sorry. So I just, for me, I feel a strong connection between the orange and the pumpkin.
Yeah, totally. And then it comes to mind Cinderella in the pumpkin at midnight and this and that. And I had been connecting Cinderella, the whole thing of like at midnight it turns into a pumpkin, like a regular old pumpkin, you know, the carriage, and like the end shining with midnight, bid the stars adieu, like this whole kind of, I don't know, like the symbolism of midnight is just really interesting. Like that midway point is the point in Egyptian mythology where in the underworld you have the point at which Horus is actually, Osiris is actually resurrected, right? That's at the middle of the night, right? Everything comes down to in the underworld. So begins his ascent, you know, because he's the sun, right? So, which is also, in this case, the orange. And then it was this whole thing with Charles Manson had all his people on orange sunshine. All the Sharon Tate murders and everything were committed while people were on this particular acid, which was called orange sunshine. And so, I don't know. It's kind of
made by Stanley, right? Stanley the Bear. Right?
Or Jack the Bear came up last time with Danny DeVito. I just stumbled upon that by coincidence the other day. I was like, whoa, Jack the Bear, there he is. Yeah, D&D. Anyways, okay, more people know Manson than Leary, maybe. What time was midnight in Egyptian times? I don't know what time midnight was in Egyptian times. I read that in an article on a day, because I got really like I wanted to look at the whole Ma'at thing and the duet and see what's going on there, because it comes up more than anything. I mean, you had said Fox was looking to be like NBC, and NBC has this peacock as their symbol. So you have Fox wants to be the sun, being 666, and then replacing the peacock. And the peacock is the symbol for Ma'at, right? So I don't know, at one point I just wanted to really get into the whole expression of that. And then I thought, I was looking at adjustment, the card adjustment a lot, with as Lamed, and then that being Lamed being the Lilith character, and I was equating that with Wendy and The Shining, and Wendy and The Shining, and Wendy and Peter Pan. And so it was just, I don't know, I was going there with that. it's funny that it's Peter Pan too, and that it's Pan is the all, right? And then it's Peter, which is, you know, what we've just expressed as the phallic name. And then also that it's sublimation. It's a symbol for sublimation. If you take the upside down cross as a place of humility, it's like you're taking the phallus and you're lowering the phallus, you know. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Can I throw you guys something really fucking weird? You mentioned the peacock, you know, besides the, like, haha peacock. Okay, I had a dream last week. And, all right, so what happens is, I have this dream where, I don't know, like, I'm at this, like, it's like this, like, outdoor party. And, but there's, like, it's like a zoo. There's, like, fucking, like, giraffes and zebras and, like, all this stuff. But there's, like, a lot of people, and it's kind of like a commotion, and there's, like, a lot of people around, and it's kind of like a party, but there's some, like, commotion going on. And somehow I know, in this dream, I know that two children, notably twins, so two twins are going to die, two small children. And I'm, like, trying to stop it. And I'm like, and there's, then suddenly, like, there's, like, some sort of commotion, and I'm, like, running around trying to figure out who the two kids are that are going to get killed so I can stop it. And then I see, like, this small child, and I sort of zero in the small child, and, like, this, like, kangaroo-type thing, like, jumps on it and crushes it. And I just watch this kid get fucking destroyed. It was, like, heartbreaking. And I'm like, oh, you know, so it's, like, this really fucked up scene. And I just sort of, like, once I realized that I couldn't save the children, I just sort of, like, walked away. And I walk, there's, like, this property there's, like, a building on the property. And I walk into the building, and I turn into this room. And I'm in this room that, if you could imagine, like, it was, like, a mix of, like, 2001 A Space Odyssey and Twin Peaks. It's, like, all, like, white walls. Very much like the end of 2001 Space Odyssey, like white walls. But then if you think like Twin Peaks, that was just like small room with like two pieces of furniture. So it's like all white walls, and there's just these two, I don't know if you'd call that like a chaise lounge or something. I really don't even know what the proper term would be. It's like a sort of couch without a back, leather. It was like this powder blue leather. I could picture it really vividly. This powder blue leather kind of couch without a back, and there's two of them. And I step in, and I believe my wife was with me, and we like step into this room, and there's these two people in there, and they're these blue people. And I'm like kind of weirded out by them. The whole vibe in this room is really fucking bizarre. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I went into the wrong room. Excuse me. You know, I'm like, sorry. So like, I go like back up, and like, oh no, no, we invited you here. They said, this is, like, our estate or our affair or something. So now I'm even more creeped out. Like, is this their... Did they... Like, in my mind, I still have these, like, two children that died. Like, is this part of their shtick? Do you know what I mean? Like, no, this is our thing. And, like, we invited you here. And there's... So the woman is this blue woman who, like, really had this sort of peacock features. Like, so that's when you said the peacock, it brought up. I keep thinking this woman had a sort of, like, peacock face. Like, the way, if you see, like, a peacock has this sort of, like, feathers sprouting off the back of the top, in the back of the head. So this woman had, like, very blue peacock features. But I was really, you can picture the man more. He was the one that was talking to me. And he had very dark blue skin, almost like, you know, like Beast in the X-Men movie. Mm-hmm. Very dark blue skin, but like really deep blue. And he keeps like rubbing his right temple, like the way someone would do if they had like water or an itch in their ear, the way they kind of like stick their finger and like shake it violently. But he's not doing it to his ear, he's doing it to his right temple. And he keeps doing that as he's talking to me. And he's saying... he says, he's had this name that I couldn't remember till later in the day. He says, where the something? And he ends up saying, I'll tell you the story. He says, where the Hectites? we're the people that were in Britain before the British. And so I end up waking up and I'm like, this dream's like really weighing on me. And I turn on my computer and the first thing I see is this headline. It says, British Atlantis found. Like they found all these like underwater city. And I'm like, what the fuck? So these blue people say, we were the ones in Britain before the British. And now the first thing I see is British Atlantis found. And I'm like, what the fuck, right? But it was actually a good, so I couldn't remember what the name he used was, you know, what they were. So I spend, like, I had to go, like, basically I had agreed to take my niece to this swimming pool. My mom had the day off from work, and she said, you want to take the niece to a swimming pool? Oh, you know, there's this public pool in New York. There's a few of them around New York. And so I said, okay, sure. So me and my wife go with my mom and my niece. We go to this pool. So I'm gone like the whole day. And in the back of my mind, I still have this dream in my mind of like, I'm trying to remember, what did they say they were? What did they say they were? So we go and we spend the day in the pool. And like after being in the pool for a few hours, it hits me. They said hectites. I'm like, what the fuck is a hectite? I honestly don't think I've ever heard that word before. So that's not until I get home later that night that I look it up. And I can only find a few sources for hectite, but it says like these, like essentially like witches or like pagan type druids, which would make them, you know, the people that were in Britain before the British. And it says that they might be servants of, if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, a Hecate, like this goddess, this triple-headed goddess.
Yeah, which
goddess.
Is the three-headed.
Exactly, the three-headed goddess.
It's a triple goddess, right?
Correct, the triple goddess. Now get this, her mother, so where I was, where this swimming pool that I was at, anyone can find it on Google Maps, I'm sure. It's called Astoria Park in New York, and it's there's Astoria Pool. It's this giant, which is funny, it's actually used to be an Olympic pool. It's this giant fucking pool, and the pool is located between two bridges. It's right on the edge of the Queens coast, between two bridges. Like when you're in the pool, you look to your right, you see this like towering over you. One is the Hell's Gate Bridge, and the other is the Triborough Bridge, which connects Queens, Bronx, and Manhattan. It's since been renamed for RFK, Bobby Kennedy. So it's really funny. You have the JFK Triple Underpass, and now they're naming the Triple Bridge after RFK.
Dude.
So Hecate is the goddess of triple crossroads, which is like a really specific thing. Triple crossroads, like not like there's a fork in the road. She's the goddess of triple crossroads.
No way, dude. You don't even know. I connected her to Princess Diana overpass.
Ah, so check this out. Her mother, in the mythology, her mother is Asteria, A-S-T-E-R-I-A. I was in Astoria pool, just changed the E to the O. So, and she's the underworld goddess. So I'm between the Hell's Gate and the Triborough in the dead pool named for Asteria. And the funny thing is, so like at some point they closed the pool for an hour to like do whatever, probably like highly chlorinate the damn thing. And so we leave and my mom goes to Burger King and like, I'm like, I don't want anything. I don't eat fast food. No, thank you. My wife's standing online with her, and my mom keeps saying, "What's Alan gonna eat?" And I go, and she says, "Alan doesn't eat fast food. He's not gonna eat anything. He's not gonna eat anything." She's like, "No, Alan. He's not gonna do it." So my mom ends up buying me, to make sure that I eat, she buys me a burger, which is just bacon and whatever that's supposed to be, beef, whatever that gray mush was that was not beef. But it's just beef and bacon is all that she got me. So check it out. Hecate is sometimes shown with her triple heads, as one head is a cow and one head is a boar. So like I just like to, like this dream follows with like this very specific series of events of like, hey, I'm here. Hey, hello, hello, hello. And it's like it's very specific that I'm. It's kind of a little confusing, to be honest. You know, sometimes when something's like a very specific symbolism repeated, I don't really know what to make of. Like, was it a, for lack of a better term, a contact experience or what? I don't know. But I think that's basically my story. I'm really interested to hear if you have any insight onto Kate or Blue People or any of this shit.
Yeah, I'm looking for right now. I had connected a while back on my blog with that particular the Triple Goddess and Princess Diana's overpass. I had this whole, I'm trying to find it, but I was noting last night in John Carter. Oh, here it is. But I was noting last night in John Carter when he cuts through the white ape. All the beings on this planet on Mars have blue blood, and which is interesting because blood is blue in everybody. It's not until it hits oxygen that it actually turns red, which is instantaneous. I mean, as soon as blood hits oxygen, and that's the only time you'll ever see it. You don't see it when it's blue, you know. So, except in your veins. But here, let's see. The Latin Diana was conceived as a threefold unity of the divine huntress, the moon goddess, and the goddess of the netherworld, Hecate. So this person, I can't pronounce his name, Alphoidy, I don't know, interpreted the nuministic image, noting the diamonetium, I don't sound intelligent right now, custis nemorique Virgo, keeper of the mountains of the Virgin of Nemi. So you should appreciate that, Alan, for your king kill business, because Nemi is the lake
where they
would cut the mistletoe sacred grove in order to decide the slave who would challenge the king.
Right. And bear in mind, I went from the pool to the Burger King back to the pool.
Right. So is addressed by Horace as Diva Triformis, or the three-form goddess. Diana is commonly addressed as Trivia by Virgil. And okay, so Hecate is a Greco-Roman goddess of triple nature, celestial and maritime, variously associated with crossroads, gates, and other entrances, passages, light and darkness, childbirth, nurturing the young, lunar lore, the night sky, the sea, the wilderness, the restless dead, dogs, snakes, healing and poisonous plants, magic and witchcraft, as well as more universal role as world soul in Hellenistic times. She is attested in poetry as the early Hesiod's Theogony, I don't know, an inscription from late archaic Miletus, naming her as a protector of entrances, is also testimony to her presence in archaic Greek religion. And so from there, this is on my blog, Aulus in Underland, Waiting for the Ides of the March Hare. I show the torch of that was basically a memorial for above the overpass where Princess Diana was killed, and how it's interesting, you know, that this is a torch that resembles very, very, very closely the Statue of Liberty's torch. And so there's this whole, I mean, obviously you have the Roman goddess Libertas or whatever you connects to the Lady Justice, who scales, which is our adjustment, right, in Crowley's, which is the Lamed, right, which is the ox goad, and then that connects to obviously the ox, which is Aleph the Fool. So you have the life breath, and then that which restricts or allows for an expansion of the life breath, and then this being the succubus, as our Lilith. So it gets kind of crazy, but I found it so interesting that you have previously, you know, Princess Diana is taken to be Isis. In fact, her perfume was called Isis perfume, created for a princess, now available for you, and how Lady Liberty is also associated with Isis, stands between the pillars. And so it's just this whole thing that is just straight up Latin Diana was conceived as a threefold unity of the divine huntress, the moon goddess, and the goddess of the netherworld, Hecate. They're like completely connected. And so that's just fucking weird.
Yeah, bear in mind when you mentioning the Statue of Liberty and the torches, on my blog post the last 2 months, what I've been focusing on is Sirius and torches, both the Statue of Liberty's torch and the Olympic torch and all this sort of stuff. And as you point out, what they consider a sort of symbolism of her is the dog and the what they call the twin torches. So not a single torch, but two torches.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's really interesting.
It's totally extremely interesting. So the universal character of Diana Nemorensis, I can't fucking pronounce this shit, Nemorensis, meant that she was venerated in the same sanctuary together with the Egyptian goddess Isis, with whose identity she became partly assimilated. Here we recognize the all-powerful goddess whose origin is lost in the remote stirrings of the religious consciousness of the Mediterranean lands. Linguistic evidence indicates that Diana was a very old Italic goddess, and historical evidence shows that she had a cult at Nemi as far back as the 6th century BCE. The Rex Nemorensis indicates that the cult is in fact far, far older than that. And so here you have a direct connection between Diana as the goddess and the cult at Nemi, which is where the whole King Kill originates.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, boom.
Yeah, so I can't tell, is this a projection from, because, you know, this is the research I'm doing right now, and this is just sort of an expression of that or a projection of that, or am I tapping into some sort of, by researching, am I tapping into this archetypal pool, or however you want to, I don't know if we can answer that question, I'm just, that's where my head's at, is like, you know.
But Alan, how many people would invest the energy and will to decode that much of your perception and your dream? You know what I mean?
I really did was Google the word hectite.
well, no, I'm just saying you put value into your dream experience.
Oh,
you
yeah,
carried
yeah.
it with you throughout the day. You fought for it. You didn't let it evaporate. It could have evaporated as soon as you woke up, but because you're in tuned to it, you have some sort of dream DVR, and that there is a space in your memory for sort of trying to make sure that it sticks, that you have made a part of your mind imprintable with this sort of stuff.
Sure.
I think that the more you spend time with sync is what we're calling this, is that it's a sort of cosmic literacy. You know what I mean? And you're very literate with this kind of thing, and the more literate you are, the more you're able to understand of it. So, you know, I can't speak to what it means, but for me, it just fits into the dynamics perfectly with how this works. You know, that you're getting resonances that are non-linear with the subject matter that you're studying. You know what I mean? And it's a credit to your acuity that you're able to draw connections between the two. So, I think that there's a certain excitement that you're over. Like, you're not blinded by the light of excitement when these things occur. You're folding it into the book that you're writing, and that will just make the book that you're writing even better. That's how I'm hearing and reading the situation.
Oh, sure. I hope that's the case, but ultimately I thought this is just to show in the book I'm doing, hey, this is how this symbolism shows up in real life, and then it's a nice, perfect example of being able to say, and you see, it's not just that, like, some boogie-woogie group, you know, put a hex on JFK, and that's why this symbolism pops up. Like, it pops up in everyday life. You know, if you pay attention to what you're, you know, what's around you, you realize, oh my God, I'm in the middle of a ritual right now, or for lack of a better term. I just want to. So, you know, what I actually am thankful you said about the DVR, the dream DVR, which I love that term. Something that I actually was very appreciative of is I feel like if I had woken from the dream and I had spent the day, like, I went online and I just, like, checked the, like, you know, the headlines before I left the house, just like, I was kind of like really shaken by this dream, and I was like curious if there was anything going on. I don't know. But so all I saw was the headline, "Hey, British Atlantis fan." I'm like, oh, that's so funny. I feel like if I had spent the next 6 hours doing other shit online, like I normally would have done, either working on my book or, you know, doing the blog or whatever it was, I don't know if I would have remembered the term, because I probably would have been bombarded by other symbols, you know? So I think I was actually very appreciative of the fact that I was completely away from any other stimulus and was just playing with a kid in a pool. You know, it was like just pure, like, removal from anything else. Now, obviously, it wasn't removal, because I'm literally swimming in the archetypes, like literally swimming in the archetypes. But nonetheless, I was glad that I didn't, like, when I remembered it, it was so many hours later, it was like, I don't know, we were in the pool for a few hours, and as I'm getting out of the pool, and I was just like, heptites, that's what he said. I just feel like there's something to be said for avoiding other stimulation or other just media bombardment, so you're not being either, you know, forgetting or muddying the waters or anything like that.
I agree with you, because I've had a lot of time, free time, this last couple of weeks to just basically walk around the city of Chicago, not going to the city to do anything specific, but just to walk around the city and just, I don't know, let my mind go and just sort of let the city be an instrument to draw out thoughts, and for me to just sort of, I don't know, meditate upon this landscape that I'm so embedded in. And I told you about a morning I went down to the lakefront, and I was just tripping on the whole magic square structure of a city and thinking of how the city of Chicago was just a giant sun square. And I was just trying to make some sense of what that meant for me and why was it resonating so strongly upon my experience of walking along the lake and taking this huge city, this whole machine in. And that was on a Tuesday, and I talked about it with you guys on that Thursday's Always Record. Well, I went back, the next time I went into the city was that Saturday, just a couple days after we had talked. And I took the exact same route into the city, and I walked to the exact same spot along the lake, and it was a beautiful morning. And as I walked down the lake and I got to this bench where I had sat down the Tuesday before, and it was when all these thoughts were sort of just exploding in my mind. And as I get to the bench, right in front of the bench, spray painted onto the concrete, is this little black and white Crowley head. And it's the image of him with his elbows on the table, and he has that hat with the Eye of Horus in the pyramid above his forehead. Now, the image just exploded into my brain, you know. It was almost as if it had followed me there, or I had chased it there. And I haven't made any concrete, logical sense of it, but more than anything, the experience of it was just fuel for me to continue the directions of my thoughts. And that happened to me on just a very micro, very simplistic level. It was just a little graffiti that someone had spray painted along this path that I had been traveling on. I think it speaks to the depth and the complexity of the work that you're developing in your book, that your example of this phenomenon is crossing over into your dream states and into your research on just an insanely complex level. And to appreciate, and to be able to sit here and appreciate you tell this story, I think that its value probably has yet to reach its completion. I think it's just an astounding reporting by you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm also amazed at how it seeps into the dream. Like, you know, the dreams. This is why I have such. This is a dangerous word to use, but, like, you know, faith in synchronicity. I don't want to put, like, a religious spin on it, but I mean, confidence in that we're studying something really amazing here is because it's one thing if I like, all right, I'm doing all this research and it bled into my dreams, then you could just say, oh, I kind of like imprinted all this stuff into my mind, you know, into my dream state. How often do we, you know, I've dreamt that I'm, you know, at work. And it's like, oh, that sucks. It's because I was thinking about, I don't want to go to work tomorrow. And then you dream about going to work, you know, whatever. So you can like, we accept to a certain extent that our dreams are susceptible to suggestion, but then your reality, that it would bleed into the reality as well, I think is a wonderful, I don't know, I would consider it evidence of that the dream state and the waking state are much less removed than most people give it credit for.
It's interesting that you use the word faith because it seems like it's a taboo word because of its connotations and its history and what it's associated with. I think that faith in work like this, the reason why I find value in it is that it seems as if faith in this work is continually, how do I say this? Christian faith is that when you die, you're going to go to heaven, and you don't know until that final moment. Well, you find out the product of your faith all the time with this work. It's what drives you on. I think it's a good word. I think it's an applicable word. I think it's the right word. I just think that it's, we have a new faith every day sometimes with this work, and the product of that faith manifests itself, and then we have a new faith, and we keep going. It's a multiplicity of faith, and we follow the trails of these faiths as deep as we can, and it definitely seems like you're getting pretty fucking deep, Alan. Like, without faith, I don't know how you're going to finish this thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm not afraid of the word faith. I hesitate to use it because I think it can be, it has, like you said, it has so many strong connotations that it could be misconstrued. Or maybe it's not being misconstrued. Maybe it is what it is. I don't know. It's just that it's very loaded language is all.
Well, this is the key thing, and I've said this before, but whatever. It's a key point. Is like, you know, I was raised with like some fucking heavy duty Christianity in terms of my schooling, especially. But there is this whole assumption that it took me the longest time to pin down what the discrepancy was with faith. And I realized that most Christians or people of, quote unquote, of the faith feel that faith and reason are like completely these separate things, where they're like, basically, faith is the guillotine of reason as far as they're concerned. They're like, you put aside your reason to accept something on faith. And so there's this constant duality that's present there, which doesn't seem like that reasonable problem, because if you say that, you know, obviously then you're intellectualizing something and you're not allowing for faith to guide you, right? So there's this whole thing. And so to qualify our terms here, I realized, I was like, what's wrong with faith being what you call upon when you recognize the limitations of your reason? Because it seems like there's this whole association with faith as a thing of humility. Now, how can you expect to find humility until you've recognized, like, you know, your own limitations? Like, it's just this whole thing. I'm like, is faith what carries you and reason recognizes its limits? Like, that seems so much more of a, I don't know, an agreeable assessment in terms of the actuality of life experience. You know, I don't know about this, like, you know, I think, but then there's also the idea that they're like, well, the child, you know, you become ye as little children, you know, like children haven't developed their reason, so they're more likely to accept something on faith. But then there's also this idea of like Santa Claus, like the child believes in Santa because he's told, and you know, Santa always watches you and he's got his fucking single eye glowing red camera, you know, that you can't, you know, get away from. And he's like determining your gifts based upon what he sees, you know, and he's an obvious anagram for Satan. But all this is beside the point. I mean, it's just basically, does the child, is he in more, is like, is that what it means to become ye as little children? To just accept what you're told and to follow the programming and believe in the thing because you have the ability to convince yourself of anything? Like, is that faith or is that something else entirely? So that's my spiel.
Well said.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe it's a little too simple, but for me, the movie that just nailed it with faith is, you know, that Indiana Jones movie where he takes the literal leap of faith. You know,
he's spelling out Jehovah with in alphabetical form. Like, that's kind of funny, right? I mean, alphabet wasn't, I mean, wouldn't it be written in Aramaic? Like, man, they're like,
I love that they go, doesn't he say something like, oh, that's right, they didn't use vowels. Yeah, guess what? They didn't use these characters either.
right.
But, you know, I love how he takes the first step and then he spreads the sand along the path.
Does he really? That's interesting.
He doesn't go, oh, this is impossible. Let me throw some sand on this bitch and let's see if something's there. No, he just goes, I've come this far. This is the only thing I can do. I'm going to look like a real fucking idiot if it ends this way. And what a fucking movie that would have been if he just fell to his death right there. That would have been just, we would have still been talking about it.
That's a good way to end the trilogy, you know. It's up to sometimes. You risk it.
Blind faith will kill you, motherfuckers. Yeah. That's my message.
Indiana Jones and the epic fail. It would have been
so this was the thing that was at the beginning I was thinking about. I don't know if you were even, I think it was just when I was talking to Bill, but or I don't know if it was, anyways, the tree in John Carter that they go up into in order to, and he gets the map of the galaxy and all of that, and it's all like encoded and the whole thing changes form and all of this, and it's all like crazy, like technological. It looks like the Millennium Falcon, at least as far as, like, I got to the end of the scene when they're running away and I was like, that looked like the Millennium Falcon. And it's just interesting because you have our Indiana Jones is Han Solo, right? His our Han Mono, where he opens up stargates, you know, in order in a sense to go into light speed. And he's kind of like a, and then Kotza pointed out that it's like a not an octagon, right? When he's looking into the portal and the Falcon, it's like this octagonal association with the Stargate repeated symbol. But anyways, I don't know.
And that's funny because that's the thing is there's this thing that people are studying, the Baltic Sea anomaly. I don't know if you've seen this, but there, you know, this is, even though this is in the Baltic Sea, I think it's very likely that there's a connection between this thing and this quote-unquote British Atlantis, where they're finding, hey, here's all this stuff that used to be underwater. It's very likely that this Baltic Sea, you know, whatever it is, it's some sort of structure, could have been part of the same, you know, same period in time when this was dry land or something. But one of the things that everyone keeps talking about it is that it looks so much like the Millennium Falcon. This is why people think maybe it's a UFO underwater, is because it looks like the Millennium Falcon. So if you just type Baltic Sea anomaly, you're going to see it looks exactly like the fucking Millennium Falcon. So I think that's really interesting that you keep bringing that up, because this is very much tied into the same thing. Speaking of falcons, so you know, I'm thinking Horus.
Yeah.
Remember last week we talked about Ethan Hawke?
Yeah.
Right? So check this out. So Ethan,
River Phoenix plays young Indiana Jones.
That's right, motherfucker.
You know what? The other part of that is that it's the whole thing with the snakes. That he fucking falls into the pit of snakes, and that is where they show you why Indiana Jones has this fear of snakes. And so there's a funny one.
And where did
one
River
of,
Phoenix die?
At the Viper What's that? Room. The Viper Room.
Yeah, he dies the fucking Viper Room. Totally.
So you have this mythological, like, you know, battling the snake. Is that a pep, probably? You know, the sort of giant serpent. You have this... what's really funny, in Egyptian mythology, actually the serpent is fought by the cat, Beset. Beset is who beheads Apep. So we were talking before about Indiana Jones being the dog and Sigourney Weaver being the pussy. So that's Sigourney Weaver fighting the dick again. Just throwing that out there. But yeah, you have that he's afraid of snakes also. That's really interesting. So this is what happened to me last night is Ethan Hawke is with River Phoenix. Then when I watched that movie Explorers where he's with River Phoenix, he is going into outer space. And then he's all about wanting to get into outer space. And then my wife points out in the movie Gattaca, it's all about him trying to get, yes, he just wants to get into outer space, and everyone's trying to keep him out of outer space. And then, so yesterday I'm at the library, and while I'm there, just this DVD, like I wasn't even over by the DVDs, and it just catches my eye, and I walk over to it, and it's Fast Food Nation. And I said to my wife, oh, have you ever seen this? And she's like, no. And I was like, oh, I was like, I think you'd like it. So I pick it up.
Fuck up, dude.
Yeah, really fucked up. But
God, that last scene when it fucking comes down the conveyor belt and it's like, oh God. Oh,
I know. But check it out. So here's the deal. I'm holding this fucking DVD. I walk over to this DVD that just caught my eye, and this like it's like I'm far away from it, and there's like this whole three shelves of DVDs, and just this one thing catches my eye, and I walk over to it and I pick it up, and it's Fast Food Nation, and I bring it back over to my wife and I go, hey, have you ever seen this? And she was like looking at something else. And then I look at the thing and I realize, oh shit, Ethan Hawke is in this, right? And then as I say that, I look over and someone had just left this DVD on a table. And I don't know what it was, but some like romance movie, like last, you know, Venice summer.
Yeah, no, Before Sunrise.
Before Sunrise, thank you, yes. So I see, and it's like, and with Ethan Hawke. And I was like, what the fuck is with Ethan Hawke? And she goes, is that your new sink guy? I was like, God, I hope not. You know, I was like, I don't want to be sinking
right,
with Ethan Hawke. But wait,
so
let me just tell you.
Also Before Sunset, but then you got to realize, like, Ethan Hawke, we're talking about Horace,
yes,
right?
So, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Horace, yeah. Sunrise, Sunset, Ethan Hawke. And right. Then, and you could even, you know, is his name Ethan or Eden? You know, you can play with that if you so desire. But check it out. In Fast Food Nation, he's only in one fucking scene in Fast Food Nation. And in this scene, he's with his niece, which is funny because I was with my niece this last week. But he's with his niece, and in the scene, he's saying to her, you got to get out of this town, you know, this town, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, so what do you really want to do? What's your passion? She goes, well, I'm thinking about studying, like, astronomical engineering. I just really want to be an astronaut. And yeah. He goes, well, that's what you should do. I'm like, motherfucker. Can I see Ethan Hawke without him being connected to astronauts or Sunrise, Sunset? And I have to try and remember. I actually went to a movie years ago. God, I wish I could remember. I think it might have been Coffee and Cigarettes. I think it might have been it was either Coffee and Cigarettes or Brown Bunny. One of those two where I went to see it in the theater and Ethan Hawke was playing with his, like, Ethan Hawke was in the movie theater playing with his kids, like, doing those, like, racing car games, like, in the same movie theater. It was, like, in Chelsea, so I guess he lives around there. And he was just, like, hanging out with his kids and blah, blah, blah. And someone's like, oh, that's Ethan Hawke. And I'm like, oh, I kind of know who that is, but not really. But I wonder if there's a connection between Coffee and Cigarettes or Brown Bunny and Ethan Hawke.
Another thing is Waking Life. So, that guy, Richard Linklater, who did Before Sunrise and Before Sunset, also did, what did he do? The fucking 60s movie, Dazed and Confused, which is a reference to Led Zeppelin, Dazed and Confused, who's a Thelemite, but that's beside the point. Anyways, he also did Waking Life, right? And Ethan Hawke, with that same girl who's in Before Sunrise and Before Sunset, are in bed and have this whole conversation.
Oh, that's right.
I don't know the significance of that. It's worth pointing out that, I mean, Waking Life, that was like, I went to go see Waking Life when it came out, and I didn't know anything about it. I was just invited to go with a friend and his girlfriend, and my friend didn't show up, but his girlfriend was there, and I had taken the bus, and I'd eaten all these mushrooms on the bus ride. And I fucking go in there while I'm, like, peeking on mushrooms, and I just, like, sit down, and I, like, you know, she's like, David, and I'm like, okay, and I'm sitting there, and I'm just like, is this really, like, I was like, no, what? Like, they just made it this way, or I'm fucking, I'm like, everything else doesn't look bad. It's only what's on the screen. Like, I don't know. It was funny.
Oh my God, that would fuck me up. Well, that's funny because I was thinking about Waking Life when we were talking before, and this goddess, is it Hecate or Hectate or how you pronounce that? It was this thing of she's the goddess for like traveling in the underworld or something, right? Or like, but there was like
and
a very specific
way.
Yeah, but a very
ways.
Specific. There was a very specific wording in her description where it's something like if you get. It's like actually if you get like lost in the underworld or you're trapped in the underworld. It's something like that. Where if you're trapped in the underworld, then that's Waking Life, where he keeps saying like, yeah, but I just feel like I can't get out. Like I'm trying to wake up and what do you do when you can't wake up?
Right.
So you're saying
from what I read? Is that what?
Yeah, what you read earlier. Yeah.
Okay, well I'm looking at it now. It's trying to protector of entrances, but light and darkness, childbirth. I mean, childbirth is as much as getting out. So, yeah, she's actually noting that she's the keeper of the mountains of the virgin, keeper of the mountains and virgin of me, which is
holy
oh
mountain.
God,
holy mountain, yeah.
Well, completely. I mean, that's the deal. So, and then also it's this whole thing of like the entrances. So, I mean, they put this, I mean, there's a placard too. So for one thing, there's this like Liberty flame above the Diana's thing. But then there's also this like the rose is there. They really push this like the symbol of the rose. But yeah, so there's the restless dead dogs, snakes.
Restless dead. That might have been what, like restless yeah. dead. And I had read, I was doing some research on her last week after the stream, and it says, like something like, being lost. Like if you get lost in the underworld, or trapped in the underworld. But yeah, restless dead. Like so, this sort of, you know, all very commonality. But when we were talking about it, I kept thinking about the movie Waking Life. I forgot Ethan Hawke was in it.
Mm-hmm. He's not in it for long, but yeah, totally. And also that kid, the main character of Waking Life is the kid in Dazed Confused. I don't know if you can do anything with that, but I've been dazed and confused for so long it ain't true. I really like that lyric. It's like for so long it ain't true. It's like, is he like saying that he's been dazed and confused for so long that nothing is true? Or are you saying he's been dazed and confused for so long that he's no longer dazed and confused? If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I get the question. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. So.
It's sort of like acclimating yourself to high altitude or something, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is the thing. It's like with the dream. Like, when you believe the dream, when you've been in a dream so long that you believe it, and you have no other point of reference other than the dream, then it's impossible to know. It's totally Plato's The Cave, right? So
yeah.
You can only communicate through symbols. So that's, you know, there's something to be said about that in terms of waking life. I mean, if you didn't question, he would never wake up.
All right, I found on YouTube the Waking Life Ethan Hawke scene, and the top comment here, because I've never seen Before Sunrise or Before Sunset, says, "This is interesting. In Before Sunrise, Celine basically believes in reincarnation, and Jesse poses problems with it. In Before Sunset, Celine claims to no longer believe in anything metaphysical, including reincarnation. And in this seemingly non-canon, how could it be, they don't see each other for 9 years, short, her views are somewhere in the middle. God damn it, Richard Linklater, you amazing bastard, continuity throughout unrelated films."
Right. So we watched both in a row last week, me and my girlfriend, by coincidence.
Really? You watched Sunrise and Before Sunrise?
Because she loves Paris, and she went to Paris, and she keeps talking about Paris, and I was like, what's that movie where they're out in Paris all night? And so I fucking Netflixed both at the same time. So they arrived at the same time. We watched one and then the other. It's just funny.
All right, so tell me about it. So what was there anything, you know, what hits you?
Well, I took one as, like, basically that when they go into the underworld, which is the night one, which is Before Sunrise, everything, they just jive and everything connects. And there's this perfection. And what it comes down to in the end is they realize is that all you have is the moment. And as long as you stay with the moment, then, you know, that's what's all important. And it's not about the future, because they're debating on whether or not to plan for the future. And then at the very end, they plan for the future. But then the second, you find out that she never showed up when she was supposed to meet him. And everything kind of falls apart. And they don't connect until the very end. In a genuine way, and then it's like he's gonna miss his flight or whatever. But I was looking at the fact that the real connection is as the sun is going down, like they're in for another night, and so it's like there's this whole thing of like at the night everything connects, and in the day nothing jives, and so I thought that was really
yeah, of course.
In the dream world, everything comes together, and we're able to make these leaps that generally for most people or whatever, even on some level for everybody, because of what thought is in the first place as the ought, is that we never actually, it remains an abyss between, you have these perceptions are all colored in relationship to the reality. So I was taking that from it. And then also that they represent the two archetypes of that she's the subconscious and he's the conscious. And then there's also this whole thing in Waking Life. Waking Life is all about lucid dreaming. So that's, it's right, the reconciliation of the dichotomy. So you have the waking life and you have the dream world. And when you branch the two, you have, yeah.
Finnegan's Waking Life.
Something you said.
Something I said?
Yeah. About how you often feel like you're observing your life from the perspective of an old woman about to die. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I still feel that way sometimes. Like I'm looking back on my life. Like my waking life is her memories.
Yeah, exactly. I heard that Tim Leary said as he was dying that he was looking forward to the moment when his body was dead, but his brain was still alive. You know how they say that there's still 6 to 12 minutes of brain activity after everything else is shut down? And the second of dream consciousness, right? Well, that's infinitely longer than a waking second. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, definitely. For example, I wake up and it's 10, 12, and then I go back to sleep and I have those long, intricate, beautiful dreams that seem to last for hours, and then I wake up and it's 10, 13.
Yeah, exactly. So then 6 to 12 minutes, right, of brain activity. I mean, that could be your whole life. I mean, you are that woman looking back over everything.
Okay, so what if I am then? What would you be in all that?
Whatever I am right now. I mean, yeah, maybe I only exist in your mind. I'm still just as real as anything else.
Yeah. I've been thinking also about something you said.
What's that?
Just about reincarnation and where all the new souls come from over time. Everybody always say that they've been the reincarnation of Cleopatra or Alexander the Great. I always want to tell them they were probably some dumb fuck like everybody else. I mean, it's impossible. Think about it. The world population has doubled in the past 40 years, right? So if you really believe in that ego thing of one eternal soul, then you have only 50% chance of your soul being over 40. And for it to be over 150 years old, then it's only one out of six.
Right, so what are you saying? That reincarnation doesn't exist? Or that we're all young souls? Like we're, what, half of us are first-round humans? I mean,
No.
What
I'm trying to say is that...
What's your point?
Somehow I believe reincarnation is just a poetic expression of what collective memory really is. There was this article by this biochemist that I read not long ago, and he was talking about how when a member of a species is born, it has a billion years of memory to draw on. And this is where we inherit our instincts.
I like that. It's like there's this whole telepathic thing going on that we're all a part of, whether we're conscious of it or not. I mean, that would explain why there's all these, you know, seemingly spontaneous worldwide innovative leaps in science and the arts, you know, like the same results popping up everywhere, you know, independent of each other. Some guy on a computer, he figures something out, and then almost simultaneously a bunch of other people all over the world figure out the same thing. They did this study. They isolated a group of people over time, and they, you know, monitored their abilities at crossword puzzles. Right, and in relation to the general population. And then they secretly gave them a day-old crossword, one that had already been answered by thousands of other people, right? And their scores went up dramatically, like 20%. So it's like once the answers are out there, you know, people can pick up on them. It's like we're all telepathically sharing our experiences.